Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is John Leonard, who is the publisher of a book called The War on Freedom, How and Why America Was Attacked, September 11th, 2001. And as we speak, it is September 11th, 2002. So it's a very apt subject. John Leonard has the publishing company called Tree of Life Publications, Joshua Tree in Joshua Tree, California. And you're telling me, John, that this is the first book that you have ever published. I know that you were very highly motivated to do this and you care about this subject. So tell us about that, how you came to do this. And the author of the book, The War on Freedom, is Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, who has the Institute for Policy Research and Development. So what happened? How did you hook up with Nafiz and come to publish this book, The War on Freedom?
Well, we were both writing articles for the internet, and I was beginning to have the feeling that it didn't have the impact that a book would have. I didn't think that I had enough material to write my own book, and I was looking for a manuscript. And the first one that came across my computer screen was this file. And I could hardly believe what I had stumbled across. I felt I had the story of the century. And I read it up until 3 in the morning and got on the phone, called England, and made a pitch to be the publisher. I also did try to find a larger, more solid publishing house to take it. I was having two hats, a literary agent and prospective publisher. And it's the story to be told perhaps there if there's time, how that went. We could possibly even talk about whether there really is a alternative or left media anymore and what the 9/11 really might tell us about the political landscape that we're in.
Yeah, we sure could. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I think there's always been a tendency for the so-called left to be more the advocate of the interests of one class of people in a domestic political framework. Has never really much defended the interests of the oppressed abroad. The possible exception to that might be the Green Party. They seem to be more following a peace and freedom platform. But there's always been the feeling, well, there's not enough jobs, we have to start a war. And there hasn't really been much concern about how the people on the receiving end of that are. And this has gotten worse and worse. It's become more technologically advanced, and we have wars where we think it's war to fry a million Iraqi soldiers, or how many, 50,000 it was, in their tanks as they're retreating, which is a violation of the Geneva Convention. And we come off with like zero casualties, or maybe somebody crashes in a helicopter by accident, and then we, you know, go home. How we are the land of the free and the home of the brave. And I would submit we're really neither.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned Iraq, of course, and we are the president. The president-select.
The unelected president. The unelected president of the United States.
Is talking about war on Iraq. It's always interesting to me to hear about this war on Iraq because already there for the United States has been bombing Iraq once a week for the last 12 years. So it's been war on Iraq. I guess it's a matter of making more, even, you know, heating it up a lot more.
Well, they're talking about regime change going in, they're changing the government, and they want to repeat what they feel was a success in Afghanistan. Of course, it's about oil. One theory is that Saddam overstepped the line when he decided to sell his oil for euros instead of dollars, which is a terrific challenge because the United States has all the benefit of being able to basically print the reserve currency of the world, the dollar. If people would go over to the euro, we'd have to sort of abide by the same financial discipline as everybody else.
Well, that's interesting.
They're afraid that the other oil states would do the same thing. The other oil producers in the Middle East might also go over to the euro.
Uh-huh. And that makes it harder for the United States to come up with the money, or how does that work exactly?
We can't print euros. We can print dollars.
Uh-huh. So that means our money is worth... Or we have less control. I don't really identify with this, but the United States has less control over the situation.
That's right. We would be subject to foreign exchange fluctuations too. Mm-hmm. But that's a little bit kind of getting into 2002. Yeah. The book is really about 2001 and about what followed after the Afghan War this year. We edited it in the first half of this year. There is a link between the Iraq and the Afghan crisis. A large part of the book is about Afghanistan, the roots of the conflict, the sort of replay of the great game that Russia and Britain played in the 19th century for control of what they call the roof of Asia, the kind of crossroads of Central Asia, of Eurasia. This idea was sort of rehashed by Brzezinski in the 90s, which is kind of ironical because he was foreign policy advisor for the most idealistic president we've had, Carter, which again says what does it mean to be a Democrat or Republican? And he rather thinly veiled recipe. His recipe was that we need to dominate Central Asia, to dominate Eurasia, to basically dominate the world's resources, and that we will need some kind of perceived massive attack to get the American people behind it. The American people are not going to go for an invasion in Asia just for nothing. Now we see this was the September 11th. This was the staged attack on the World Trade Center. The whole ritual of patriotism, flag waving, the very reminiscent of the Reichstag and the mass production of swastika flags in the 30s, the title of the book, I think, is quite apt, The War on Freedom, because another analogy to the Nazi era is that we are legislating the destruction of our own Bill of Rights, as they did in the Weimar Republic. And this is all being greeted with howls of rage and joy by a patriotic public who want revenge. Mm-hmm. And this is the classic way to get your people into war without letting them feel any sort of guilt about it. You make them feel justified. You have a very small elite that arranges the incident to happen, and they're professionals, and they know what they want to do. They want to create a war. They want to secure those resources, and they're doing it for their happy public. So at the end of the day, what you have is, and I sort of have a commercial background, is you have a sort of agency and principal relationship. The agent is the CIA, the U.S. government. The principal is the U.S. public, and they're commands, their orders, their wishes are to have cheap gasoline. Mm-hmm. And the job of their government is to procure that and not let them, without telling them how they do it. and this is what you've got. This was a war for the pipeline in Afghanistan. We built the Taliban, and we took them down when they did not play along the lines of putting that pipeline down to the Indian Ocean. Now, this pipeline is supposedly to serve the Far Eastern market, so possibly it could have just as well been piped directly to China, but that would have taken it outside of the scope of the U.S. oil companies. I'm not a real expert, an oil expert or energy expert, but I do feel that the Zbigniew Brzezinski great game, is also about containing China, because really we've had the Islamic world flat on its back ever since we encountered it in the colonial days. The Islamic world has never really recovered from even the Mongol invasion. But China is a resurgent power. It's an economic power. They put more value added into their products for every drop of oil they use than we do. We squander most of it. And other things being equal, on an equal level playing field, they would start to catch up with us because they're more efficient user of oil. So are the Europeans. They've cut back on their waste. And the balance of political power in the world has been moving towards a more humane, collaborative approach, as if like the human race were in a nursery and we're now at the age where, okay, we have to learn to start sharing toys. Mm-hmm. And there's one big bully in a nursery that doesn't want to share, and that's the United States.
Yeah. And that's really clear in some ways, like not agreeing to do energy-saving things, pulling out of the Kyoto Agreement. And John Leonard, you're saying some very strong things, which I agree with. And I've been, I've been involved in political activism and educating myself I'm in my 60s, well in my 60s, and so I have a lot of experience and a lot of education. Both from traveling and reading and going to school and talking to people, interviewing people. But most people don't have all this information. And it's really, I have the impression there's a lot of people that think that there's something very fishy has gone on. I know as soon as I saw Osama bin Laden's picture on the TV right after the Twin Towers, the World Trade Center fell, I started muttering to myself about, I bet they did it themselves, because it was my intuition.
That was your personal intuition.
Yes.
Well, how many people do you think are thinking along those lines?
I have no idea, because I live here in Berkeley, California. I don't travel too much anymore. And, you know, the people that I speak to who travel and give speeches say there's a lot of people that are just really wanting information. And it's been very interesting, because what you're talking about, the so-called independent, in parentheses, maybe leftist, it doesn't, mm-hmm. independent media doesn't have to be left, but what is it all about? Because there's a lot of people that I would assume would have the same suspicions I do. And now there's like huge amount of evidence, and a lot of the evidence, I understand most of the evidence is right in this book that you published, The War on Freedom, How and Why America Was Attacked, September 11th, 2001, by Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed. And people can get that book. We're going to let you know how to get that book, and you can see a lot of it, read a lot of the evidence. And I've been hearing the evidence for practically the whole year now, and it's just mounting. I just heard an interview today with Professor Shostakovsky from University of Ottawa, professor there in Canada. He says there's no question about it. Some people in the United States and the United States intelligence agencies, it wasn't even just about foreknowledge, it was about they set it up. Of course they knew what was happening. Now that's very, a disturbing thing to think about one's country. Yeah, and there's so many people that just refuse to believe it. And then I think that there are probably a lot of other people who aren't necessarily activists. I kind of have the impression, I hear different little stories about and from people and about other people they know, of people who are saying they have those feelings and mm-hmm. those suspicions, even though they haven't been mm-hmm. activists and they don't know all this geopolitical history and machinations that you were just starting to refer to, John Leonard.
Well, yeah, I do think that it's whether or not one believes that this could be a conspiracy is something that breaks down on something other than traditional left-right political lines. As I mentioned, we had a really tough time trying to get left-wing publishers to touch the complicity issue. They wanted to just have some kind of classic Marxist idea that this was our comeuppance for oppressing the third world or something.
Which it well could be. I mean, and there's plenty of reason for the people in the rest of the world to be very angry at the United States. But that doesn't make it true that that's what happened.
Well, I wrote one small part of the book in which I said that, in fact, there's nobody in the world crazy enough to attack the United States. Nobody has ever wanted to attack the United States or want war with the United States. And I list the reasons for that. But the United States has often wanted to have a war for the simple reason that it will win and will expand its sphere of influence every time it has a war.
The weapons producers will get richer.
That's another thing. The American people are no more or no less warlike than others. We're pretty warlike, but you know, we're not, you know, raving maniacs about going to war. We don't love war, although we have a great deal of military ritualism in our folklore, in our political folklore. Our anthem is terribly militaristic, and we have a very deep vein of militarism that we can draw on when we need to. We're not quite as extreme as, say, Prussia or something. But what we have is a militarist tradition which is sort of one with a smiley face. And if we have time, I may develop the theme that we have actually fascism with a smiley face. We have smiley face fascism in this country because fascism was a theory that war was some kind of holy force that brought out the superior people. It was kind of a social Darwinist idea that war was a good thing. That was their excuse. Everybody needs an excuse to declare war on somebody weaker. Nobody is quite that brutal that they can just go and do it. Well, maybe the Mongols. The Mongols also had that idea that they were clearing the world of these weak, effete rubbish. That's what they thought they were doing with their swords. Well, we're not into that, so we have to do something else when we want a war. And how we do it is with these covert provocations. And we seem to always get away with it. To the people that do it, they get away with it. There's always a suspicion. And I list there the long list of practically every war we've been into has been preceded by one of these very suspicious incidents, like the USS Maine, the USS Lusitania that was a Spanish-American in the First World War. Pearl Harbor, the facts came out finally that it was actually arranged, FDR intentionally provoked the Japanese, and then, of course, concealed from the sailors at Pearl Harbor that they were going to be attacked. And 2,400 sailors lost their lives. He got away with that until it was posthumously published with Freedom of the Information Act in evidence in, I think, 1995. So he got away with that for 55 years, and he only lived 4 years. So everybody gets away with this. So they have a why shouldn't they try it again?
I want to just underline what you're just saying there, John Leonard, because I don't know how many people know about this, about the attack of Pearl Harbor and Roosevelt knowing about it. And you just said 2,400 sailors were killed. I'm repeating that because just in case you don't know it, and that's now established fact. So people say that they can't imagine their government doing this type of thing. But there are many examples in history now that are known for sure. I mean, they're known way after they were done. And we know from our own experience that the United States government does lots of horrible things. And that's not the only government that does horrible things to its people, but it's one of them. And if you think about it, it's not so far-fetched. And it is upsetting, but it's not far-fetched.
Well, yes, we're not the only government. The Chechen War, the second one that's going on now, was set off by Vladimir Putin, who was running the secret agency over there. What do they call it? The FSB. Those people were blowing up apartment blocks. They were caught red-handed, and they somehow made some excuses that it was a training mission. They had put this hexogen, this bags of it, an explosive, in the basement of an apartment block, and they were caught. And they explained it away, and the media fell in line. And that was the beginning of the Chechen War. So it's quite interesting that you mention also that not everybody seems to know this about Pearl Harbor. The average person doesn't know it. It was written in a book called Day of Deceit by an author called Stinnett. And it was from Freedom of Information Act evidence. But it has not sunk in American the American mind. We may have time to talk about why that is, if there's some certain reluctance on the part of American people to look at themselves in the mirror. There was another incident that comes from Freedom of Information Act evidence. Was 1962 approximately, the infamous Operation Northwoods, very similar to 9/11. There was the whole plan was actually somehow evaded the paper shredder and came out to the investigators. Kennedy nixed it. It was a plan to blow up an airplane with American tourists over Cuba, or maybe to some kind of attack on Cape Canaveral or buildings. They had various scenarios that they could use, and the whole thing was just to create a pretext for a war on Cuba. And Kennedy said no, and that came out. So we know that this is the way they think. We know that they claim that this idea of planes hitting buildings had never been thought of, but we know that in 1993 the Pentagon, and this is in the book, actually commissioned a study for $250,000 exactly on that, how to do that. And the year 1993-94, there were two or three actual incidents, which seems to be like it was a trial run, and then after that nothing happened until 2001. There are some, possibly the difficult part of this is that we don't have really the person who's come forth, except possibly this very murky character, Vreeland, who is so murky that we didn't put him in the book, but the whistleblower that comes forth and says, you know, yes, it's true, we did it, I'm sorry. You know, that person hasn't come forward. But that's not so astonishing, because if you know your kids, when they break something, they don't run into you and tell you, I broke it. You know, they make an excuse. But the what we do have is such a mass of coincidences. Like, people talk about conspiracy theory. Well, I say, well, you call me a conspiracy theorist, I call you a coincidence theorist. You say that all these coincidences are possible. How can it be possible? I don't have the statistical tools to measure the improbability, but it's got to be astronomical. It's got to be like something beyond impossible.
Well, let's talk about what some of those coincidences that don't seem to me like coincidences either, what some of those are, and maybe some main points of this book, The War on Freedom, How and Why America Was Attacked, September 11th, 2001. And I want to say that the author is Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, who has the Institute for Policy Research and Development, and he's only 24 years old. He was supposed to be here in the Bay Area speaking at some rallies and demonstrations and doing different engagements, but he couldn't make it. But you did make it, living in California. He lives in England. And so it was a lot bigger trip, and I understand there's personal family reasons. Is that true? Is that why he couldn't make it?
They had their first baby. It was a difficult birth, and he had to stay on the home front. I brought my wife and two little ones up here to see the Bay Area. So we were talking about sort of what are some of the salient indications of that this was a plot. I think one of the main ones to me is the three FBI agents who actually discovered who, where, when, the whole plan, what was going to happen, where, how they were going to do it, and when they reported it to their superiors, they were muzzled, and they are still under a so-called gag order. They're forbidden to speak about it. They're using a lot of these very undemocratic procedures.
Surprising they're still alive.
Well, I think they're alive, but they are following orders. They're not talking about it. And their attorney took a man named Shippers, Daniel Shippers, who was actually the prosecutor in the Clinton impeachment trials. So it's not just anybody. It's a person of stature. And he has recorded in our book what these people told him, basically that they knew the whole plan. Other FBI revelations have come out in the media that people tried to relay their suspicions onward. Recently it came out that one FBI informant was living with two of the hijackers. They explained that away. So there's so many of these things that they explain it away, explain it away. And I would also accept that if there were just one of these things. I'm not particularly a fan of conspiracy theories or a reader of detective fiction or something. It's not particularly my cup of tea. But it's clear to me also from the way the investigation or lack thereof goes on, the investigation is not looking for complicity. It's looking for incompetence, and they're not going to find it because that wasn't the problem. Another thing is that we are not given as Americans a lot of the tools we need to think about this. We're not given the tools of clear thinking. We're accustomed to think in terms of averages. If the majority says something is true, it must be true. All kinds of very wishy-washy kind of woolly ways of thinking. We don't know, like, for instance, the ad hominem rule, that it's not who says it, but whether it makes sense that counts.
Well, one of the things I have to tell you that didn't make sense to me was why planes weren't, you know, how there could just be nobody running, going after these planes that were supposedly hijacked. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. I mean, you can't say that we're incompetent. I mean, if we're incompetent, then why do we spend 50% of our budget or something like that on military? We have the most sophisticated military in the world. Yeah. They go after people, you know, on planes in the sky and everything all the time. Right. It doesn't make sense that they'd be flying around for an hour without, I mean, that in itself was, I mean, it, without any planes going after them, any military planes, it was totally crazy.
Another thing is the just really torrent of warnings that came from foreign intelligence agencies. One critic that we have in the book, von Bülow, who is a parliamentarian in the Oversight Committee for Intelligence in Germany, says that this is obviously the work of a state intelligence agency. It could not be done by just a group of mujahideen. It was a huge operation. And he says such an operation leaves a huge footprint. And that's why all these warnings were coming in, because everybody was picking up on it. It was just too big.
And warnings came from the German intelligence service, the Israeli intelligence service?
Russia. The latest, even the Taliban foreign minister tried to warn us. And, you know, he got bombed for his pains. So to me, it's very clearly an inside job. Also, the way the whole thing has been patched together, it's like a fake. If they really wanted to know the truth about what happened, you'd see people being disciplined for why did you let this happen? Nothing's happened. Everybody's being let off. You'd see some digging, but you don't see digging. What you see is covering up the hole. This is all the covering up behavior. What you're seeing. I guess we just have a couple more minutes. Perhaps I'll let loose that one kind of hard statement. If I wanted to sum it up in very, very, very few words, I might quote P.T. Barnum, who said the American people love a humbug. American people are reluctant to hear about this. This is why a bombshell like Day of Deceit has not really penetrated the American consciousness. This is what the psychologist calls cognitive dissonance. We don't want information that doesn't accord with our self-image as the people on the shining white steed that they're saving the world. And before we get too carried away with assailing Bush and the CIA, we also have to apply the same yardstick that they applied at Nuremberg, that it's not just the people at the top that are responsible, it's also the people down the line. Mm-hmm. And that means all of us sitting at the gas tank. That means that every time that they try to raise the gasoline tax by a penny, and we're out there going crazy, lobbying, that we have to have our cheap gas for our big cars so we can... We're all in on this, because in a way that they're just really doing what they think we want.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of things are happening. All kinds of people are getting locked up. There's all this racial targeting of anybody who looks like they could even maybe be Arab. I mean, it's just total, you know, locked up, and people can be locked up for the rest of their lives on suspicion. I mean, there's really serious things happening, so it makes a real big difference. Some people say, well, what's the difference? All these things are happening. Well, I don't understand that. Obviously, it's a huge difference, because this excuse is used for doing all this stuff.
We have a quote right on the title page, those from Benjamin Franklin, those who would sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither.
Okay, well, thank you very much, John Leonard. We need to know how to get this book, The War on Freedom, How and Why America Was Attacked, September 11th, 2001, by Nafiz Mozadeh Ahmed, and Ahmed is A-H-M-E-D. How do we get the book?
Well, actually, the first name, N-A-F-E-E-Z, is a good search argument if you're looking on a search engine, but you don't have to do that. It's on Amazon. It's cheaper on BarnesandNoble.com, BN.com. It's on my website, thewaronfreedom.com, with the.
Thank you again. Publisher of the book, The War on Freedom, John Leonard, thanks for this interview. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.